Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 640, Winging It with Daniel Hopsicker. This has been recorded on June 29th of the year 2008. And once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, well, the author of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, the second edition of that latter just out in paperback with two additional chapters, and also the kingpin of the Mad Cow Morning News website, www.madcowprod.com. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Well, I'm happy to be winging it with you.
Yeah, well, I thought winging it would be an appropriate title for the show because so many of the, not only your the material of your books, but also the articles on your website deal with flying. And it deals with, well, actually it deals with several kinds of flying, but it deals with people using airplanes to bring in illegal products, which in turn cause people to fly on the ground, sometimes flying off the handle, I guess you could say. We're talking about drugs, illegal drugs, cocaine and heroin in particular. And so many of the, like I say, so many of your articles deal with these, and there's another pun there, with a lot of this is dealing. They treat subjects that have to do with the aerial drug smuggling milieu, and so many of these flight paths, so to speak, crisscross with Wally Hilliard, the real Wall-E, so to speak, and the crew down at Huffman Aviation and the many, many elements that are associated with them one way or another.
Well, you know, it's funny you would mention that, call the show Winging It, because I just videotaped the intro to the new documentary I'm working on, The New American Drug Lords, and it is about exactly why we're talking so much about airplanes. And I'll paraphrase a few lines if you want me to, about why general aviation is what I'm talking about all the time.
Yeah, sure.
Be more enthusiastic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. I'm keeping an eye on our levels too at the same time.
Sure. All right.
But once again, a nice flying metaphor. And
well, here's the deal. General and business aviation is the method of choice for the transportation of illegal drugs. Now, what that should mean is that aircraft ownership and registration records would be the best means of identifying the traffickers. Okay? But what I have found, surprisingly or not, is that the government knows a lot more about who owns your car and how much you owe on it than it does about who owns multi-million-dollar aircraft that can transport multi-ton loads of cocaine. The FAA's registration procedures, I mean, compared to the DMV, the FAA's registration procedures are incredibly lax, and they're riddled with loopholes that you could fly a DC-9 through, almost literally, Dave, a DC-9, which means, that can't be by accident, and it's not. I mean, the FAA's commitment to combating illegal activities has been questioned by many people, so it must mean that our government wants things this way, okay? And why is the question? Why does the government want things this way? Because the answer is really simple. It's because general aviation is crucial to this government and any government's covert activities. Most covert activities involve moving things in and out of countries without being detected. Things like money, drugs, passports, diamonds.
Weapons,
people.
Yep.
And the best way to do that is by using planes. So there you go. There's a whole fraternity of pilots who know this, who make a living, used to make a living, hope to make a living, flying in and out of places where there are no prying eyes in the control tower. That's another thing. There's, in Venice, for example, there's no tower at the airport. So it means you can fly in and out without being detected by anyone. There's no one's keeping track of who's flying in and out. And there's nothing between the Venice, Florida airport and the Yucatan but 400 miles of empty ocean. Places like where I am right now are where this sort of activity exists. It doesn't exist at, you know, San Jose International Airport, and it doesn't exist at LAX, or, you know, if it does, it's not be harder to detect. But in places where things aren't watched as closely, and again, the fact that general aviation is not regulated even as much as you and I are when we go to register our cars is just it's shocking beyond belief. If you're in a mood to be shocked, Dave, and as we know, you and I always are.
Well, yes and no. I'm always open to new information. In fact, I go out of my way to seek it, and then wind up impoverished as a result. But there isn't a whole lot at this point, I don't think, that's going to surprise me. You know, that not to sound necessarily world weary or jaded, but. You know, I started out in the early and mid-70s researching the assassination of President Kennedy, and things just branched out from there. And to make an exceedingly long story very, very short, we ain't in Kansas anymore, Toto. And so it doesn't surprise me that there's so little oversight of what's going on. The general aviation, now that is not a common noun, is it? It's actually the name of a firm, is it not?
No, it's called General Aviation, Civil Aviation, you know, Business Aviation. It's planes that aren't big enough to have UPS on the side of them,
mm-hmm.
And they're not, you know, there's a whole range of them, intermediate jets, business jets, Gulfstreams. It started with twin-engine planes. In fact, Barry Seal was involved when, and this story turned out to be totally true, and it was so bizarre that I could not give it credence when I heard it. And 5 years later, I discovered, quite by happenstance, that it was totally true. It was a story by the recently deceased Jerry Patrick Hemming, who I'm sure you know more about than I do. Jerry was involved with Barry in the 70s, working for, of all things, the DEA.
Very quickly, Jerry Henry Hemming was involved with all sorts of things, including something called the International Penetration Force. His curriculum vitae runs from the covert operations surrounding efforts to get Fidel Castro in the early 60s, along with Barry Seal, right on up through the events and elements involved in the assassination of President Kennedy, and coursing on up through the decades, through things connected to Watergate and, if not the Iran-Contra scandal, certainly things leading up to it. So he was a player in a great many different things, and it's sort of the same environment that we saw Barry Seal and the assassination of JFK and David Ferry and the netherworld that embraces so much of American political and economic life for the last 30 or 40 years. But that's specifically who Hemming was.
The very same. The very same. Hemming and Seal were hired by the DEA at its inception under President Richard Nixon. And the first thing they did together, Hemming told me, was they flew search missions looking for downed planes. And the traffic apparently was and is so heavy that there needed to be a search utility available to look for a plane when it went down. And then later he told me in about 1976, they had been sent to a tiny airport out in Nevada, or rather, Arizona, Eloy, Arizona, tiny airport there, to train pilots on twin-engine planes, okay? Twin-engine planes fly twice as far as single-engine planes do, and are able with one hop to make it from Colombia to the U.S. And so that was what was decided was going to be used to fly regular flights of narcotics. And they trained pilots for the DEA, Hemming told me, at this tiny airstrip midway between Phoenix and Flagstaff to fly these twin-engine planes. And I thought, that's ridiculous. I mean... you always have to be careful when people who were there tell you stories, because you never know if they're going to tell you the truth or not. But I thought, how silly could that be? I mean, you know, I couldn't give it credence, actually. But then I was on a mission looking for something totally different. And a guy that's now no longer with us was driving me around, and we drove by there. And I said, well, let's check in here. And we checked in there, and I found people right at that airport just 3 years ago that remembered when the DEA was training pilots, and remembered that at the same time there was a DC-3 flying drugs in. That was common knowledge that it was flying drugs in, and it was part of the operation. So there you go. Planes, Barry Seal was a Civil Air Patrol student in the mid-50s, as was Lee Harvey Oswald, and they were both recruited by David Ferry. And, you know, that's the world, that's the milieu from which many of the things that people end up scratching their heads about, you know, began, take place. That's the world in which it takes place, the world of covert operations, which generally involve airplanes these days.
You covered a case where recently in an article specifically called the mother of all scandals. Actually, no, I got it right here in front of me. It's called the mother of all scandals. And this concerned the crash of an airplane down in Venezuela. And it turned out not only was a very key personage killed on that flight, but it also helped to, at least for a time, pull down the facade that covered part of this underground economy and underground political network. Tell us a little bit about Smartmatic, about Sequoia, about some of the people who had been moving in and out of Comandante Chavez's Venezuela, and how that connects up with people like, you know, in a general sense, people like Wally Hilliard and the other heirs to Barry Seal, Jerry Hamming, and others.
Well, you know, okay, so let me start where it began for me. After finishing Barry and the Boys, I was looking for something to do, and some friends suggested that I take a look at their ridiculous idea that elections might not, American elections might not be as open and honest as we all know them to be. And so the year 2000 presidential election, the night of the election, I was in the hangar with George W. Bush when he came back and saw later that night that the story, of course, was in Florida. So I drove to Florida from Texas. And when I got to Florida, I saw the assembled national press, I mean, en masse, okay, in Tallahassee, West Palm Beach, and they weren't worth spit. I was just sitting around on their Blackberries waiting for the next press release. And I'm a former business reporter, Dave, so I decided to do something pretty simple, which to look into the ownership of the two election services companies that together had caused what was being called the Florida vote snafu. They were two of the three largest companies. And Sequoia Pacific was the one I focused on in the main, because I quickly discovered that the owner of Sequoia Pacific at the time of the 2000 election was a man who hangs out at Zurich racetracks with Geneva currency speculators, a man who was at that time under indictment in Spain, was being investigated for bribing the Prime Minister of Ireland, and had a whole history of backroom sort of things, Michael Smurfit. So he owned, I realized very quickly that the ownership of these two companies to count our votes could not withstand close scrutiny. I mean, I always figured, up until I got into this at this point, that when you went into a voting machine, that the man who stood behind the voting machine, at least symbolically, was kind of an IBM guy in a white lab coat, you know, with a pencil protector, and he was making sure that everything was calibrated correctly. But that's not the case. Election companies, the companies that we vote on and that then count our votes, have been owned by scoundrels for as far back as it goes. That's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
Preamble, Dave.
Okay. Well, the past is prologue, as Shakespeare once observed.
So that's where my interest then, of course, moved on after 9/11, and I still have not gotten back and want to write at some point a book about elections. Then six weeks ago or so, I read an interesting piece which just piqued my interest, which was about a plane that had gone down in Venezuela, a light plane, twin-engine plane that had gone down in Venezuela, carrying the man who founded a company in Venezuela that purchased Sequoia Pacific. Okay, Sequoia Pacific went through a couple of owners from the time I was investigating it. Now it had ended up owned by a company, a Venezuela company, that there was a scandal over, because there were allegations that the company had close ties to Hugo Chavez. And indeed it did.
Mm-hmm.
The company was forced to sell, Smartmatic was the company, and it was forced to sell Sequoia Pacific in 2006, about a year after it purchased it. But I, you know, that story was kind of on the periphery of my vision, but I immediately realized there was something not right about it, because would Karl Rove allow a company that counts 1 in 3 American votes to be owned by a sworn enemy of George W. Bush? No, of course not. I mean,
very quickly, Daniel, and for veteran listeners, for the record, 476 goes into some of the ownership conglomerates, basically, the people that own Smartmatic and behind it. And when you dig deep, not only are there Chavez connections, but also hedge funds connected to the old and financial institutions or entities, really, because I'm not sure quite how you'd call some of these, connected to the old IG Farben chemical cartel from the Third Reich and World War II, which has some of the largest chemical and pharmaceutical companies in the world. But yes, there are some links running in the direction of Hugo Chavez, among others, but more about that later. So you were looking at this story, and you found that this company that counts 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 American votes has some links to the milieu of Hugo Chavez, but it has a whole lot more than that.
Well, yeah, a whole lot more than that. I mean, so the Hugo Chavez Associated Company was forced to sell Sequoia Pacific ostensibly to its American owners, its American executives, okay? But the... Brad Friedman writes about this all the time, the Brad blog, give him a little plug, writes about how the software in the machines is still that which was composed by this 34-year-old man who founded the company. Mm-hmm. He died in a plane crash, okay? The man whose software is on computers that count, that we vote on and count, you know, maybe 1 in 4. I used to say 1 in 3, but it's smaller now, 1 in 4. Or 5 American votes, died in a plane crash. Now, what's unusual about that? The pilot of the plane was a veteran drug pilot who had been convicted of drug smuggling in both Florida and Venezuela. So immediately, two major scandals, vote scam and CIA drug trafficking, like are wedded in this on this one plane. What is a guy, a software engineer, doing going down on a plane being flown by a veteran drug pilot? But then it got even more complex because the plane the two of them were on and died on was owned by a company in Houston, Texas, known to sheep dip planes for the CIA.
And
that's owned by a retired lieutenant colonel, mm-hmm. in the U.S. military. And I spoke to a man who knows the man in Houston very well, and this retired lieutenant colonel would not be disposed to have anything to do with Hugo Chavez or anything to do with drug traffickers.
Mm-hmm.
But he was disposed to having plenty to do with helping the covert intelligence operations of the United States government hide things when necessary, and it's been shown that he helped them sheep dip probably 6 to 12 planes that were used in CIA renditions. So now you have a story that I don't pretend to understand, Dave. We got a software engineer for a Hugo Chavez connected company going down on a plane being flown by a drug smuggler that's registered to a company in Houston owned by a retired lieutenant commander in the Army who sheep dips planes for the CIA. Go figure.
Well, one of the things that at the very beginning of the program, we were talking about general aviation, and I thought that might have been a specific reference to one of these aircraft front organizations, because we're talking specifically now in connection with the fellow you just alluded to, the former lieutenant colonel. We have Aircraft Guarantee, and we also have a number of other fronts in connection with these many other flight stories, the lobbyists, Mr. Brassington and others. They have names like Executive Flight Support, Aircraft Guarantee, you know, and that's why I thought general aviation might be a proper noun. Because
I got a friend out in California who won't appreciate hearing this reference, but hopefully he won't find out about it. He's a nice man, and he's retired apparently, but one never knows, from like a 30-40 year career in covert operations and intelligence, and he used to operate a company called Pacific International, and then when that company achieved a little bit of notoriety, he changed the name and operated as International Pacific. So the generic sounding names can be a clue, okay?
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you have Executive Flight Support, Aircraft mm-hmm. Guarantee, Yo Mama General Aviation, and Associated Services, you know, and it's not meant. One of the things that we should underscore as people attempt to follow the various tributaries that course through some of these events. These things aren't supposed to be transparent in any way. They're supposed to be opaque. They are supposed to confuse. So if it seems confusing, that's not an accident.
Well, you know, I asked a friend of mine one time why it was so easy for me to figure out what was going on with these entities. And his answer, I mean, I told him, I said, you know, I don't think I'm necessarily the sharpest knife in the drawer at any and all times, but how come it's so easy? And he said, because they don't bother to hide it. So partly they don't bother to hide it because there aren't any investigative reporters for major media outlets that can break a story and make it news who are going to look into any of this.
Well, I wouldn't say that they hide some of it. And well,
But it isn't terrifically difficult, you know. And sometimes, you know, they name the companies like with a wink and a nod.
Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly do. This is in the realm of speculation, but obviously with Chavez having more or less successfully marketed himself to the world as, you know, the anti-imperialista, you know, or imperialisto, and the thorn in the side of Uncle Sam and the resolute opponent of U.S. imperialism and so forth. And yet, right down in his fiefdom, so to speak, in Venezuela, an intelligence guy, if not CIA connected, and if I could offer maybe a slight bit of constructive criticism, it's not a knock. But I would say, and I would use the term intelligence rather than necessarily CIA, although, you know, certainly the Central Intelligence Agency would be part of this mix. Because one of the things that's happening in the United States and presumably elsewhere is the privatization of what were once federal national security functions. Blackwater, for example, has taken over much of what used to be the CIA. And in the Iran-Contra scandal, for example, we saw off-the-shelf intelligence operations, which certainly involved to an extent CIA, but also a lot of other people. You certainly know what the Safari Club is. That was a privatized intelligence service, international intelligence consortium, involving elements of CIA, but also other foreign intelligence services, and all of it underwritten by the Saudis. So I would say intelligence here, rather than necessarily CIA.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I've always used CIA, because CIA is what they put out there. While newspapers were reporting for decades that CIA was synonymous with American intelligence, okay, the NSA, for example, was growing to be six times as large as the CIA. But I figure if they're going to put CIA out there as the stamp on government covert activities, why not use it? Because I don't know if it could be the National Reconnaissance Office, okay, that was training Arabs to fly in Venice, Florida. I don't have access, you know, to that information, and never pretended to. I never saw a car parked at Huffman Aviation that had a CIA parking pass on it, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't the CIA that was running that operation.
It'd
be better off using what's-his-face's Howard Hunt's old phrase, clandestine services. And, you know, the clandestine services of the government of the United States of America, as opposed to CIA or this, that, or the other.
One of the goals of the far right for a long time, and they have big, big, big money, has been to create their own privatized national security establishment, precisely because even the relatively superficial and ineffectual oversight and consequent investigation that used to quote, hamper, unquote, note the quote, CIA and other agencies, was a bit much for them, and they didn't want it to be accountable. And to a large extent, I think they've successfully financed and launched just such an enterprise. But going back to Chavez, here you have a U.S. intelligence-connected plane, an aircraft ferrying drugs and involving people who had documented connections to him. It goes down in Venezuela on a rooftop, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It goes down on a rooftop in Venezuela, which certainly, you know, when here's Chavez basically marketing himself as, the anti-George Bush or as the thorn in the side of U.S. imperialism, it not only has to have been embarrassing, but one of the things that I found quite striking, there was an op-ed column in a newspaper, and I've forgotten offhand what it was. It might have been actually online. It might have been in the New York Times. I've forgotten where I saw it. But somebody was talking about Hugo Chavez having executed a fairly sharp turn, at least rhetorically and perhaps in terms of policy. He suddenly told the FARC narco guerrillas in Colombia, you know, it's time to lay down your arms and so forth. And he had been somebody who had championed them and apparently gave them considerable support. And people were noting that suddenly Hugo Chavez's rhetoric and to a certain extent actions seemed to have undergone a relatively sharp turn and moderation, at least in terms of his attitude towards the U.S. and others. And what I wonder about is to what extent he basically got his expletive deleted in the ringer as a result of this flight, and perhaps that may have been one of the goals, was to basically, here you go. And I've wondered almost from the get-go with Chavez. I just, at a pure instinctive level, I suspected he might have been our boy from the beginning, you know. And
what it points up, does it not, more than anything else, what pretty much anyone looking at this can agree on, is we don't know. You know, once again, here's a situation in which we are forced to speculate as to, you know, what was going on in a very strange circumstance. You know, we don't know. But through investigating this one plane that went down, now Aircraft Guarantee Corporation had crossed my radar half dozen times, but I'd never focused on it. Well, it turns out that by looking into this one plane that went down, what I discovered was that there is a ghost fleet of at least 600 planes that we are not allowed to know who owns flying around, with American registered planes whose ownership is shielded by Cayman Island Trusts,
mm-hmm.
which are then registered with this outfit in Houston. And, it's interesting. I wanted to know who owned that plane. So I requested the registration documents on the plane. And you get from the FAA, you get a CD with the owners of the plane, and it really told me nothing. So I called the spokesman for the FAA, who I won't use his name because I want to talk to him again sometime. But he's the guy. Anytime you read anything from the FAA, he's the guy that says that says it. And he says, well, there are some ancillary documents in the file that you have to request specifically in order to get from the FAA. So I did, and I got another pile of 40-page pile of documents, basically showing that the plane that went down in Venezuela with a drug pilot on it and the owner of this computer software company is registered to a company called Aviation 700.
Let's talk about that on the other side here, Daniel, because we're almost out of time. I guess you could say, Houston, we have a problem, and a rather big one under the circumstances. And one way of...
Just think of it this way. I mean, if someone rear-ends your car, you want to know both who was driving the car and who owns the car.
Indeed. Let's figure that out on side two, though, Daniel, because we are out of time on side one. We have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, the latter newly released in paperback with two additional chapters, and also the kingpin of the Mad Cow Morning News and the www.madcowprod.com website, featuring articles covering many of these undercover activities. And I strongly encourage people who have had their interest piqued by the first side of this broadcast to go to the website and to follow some of these evidentiary tributaries winding through the netherworlds of international finance and criminal activity. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening to Side 1 of For the Record 640 Winging It with Daniel Hopsicker. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.